Welcome to Career Tools. Today's topic, getting a bad review. Here we go. Man, I hope this never happens to, I know it won't happen to you because you're my partner and I couldn't fire you. I don't write your review.
Yeah, that's right.
And even if I did, it would be nothing but a glowing review. But I mean, like being fired, getting a bad review is killer. It feels terrible.
Yeah.
And it's not fatal.
Well, I thought you just said it was killer.
Okay. All right.
But you're right. It's not fatal.
It's something you can get over. But you have to have a plan.
Yeah, and since I'm the one of the two of us who has been fired, I can say, like being fired, when you look back on it, it can turn out to be the best thing that ever happened. And I've alternately at times said about getting fired that, you know, I wish it on everyone. And then I okay, kind of take that back.
Great. Hey, thanks for being listeners,
well,
folks.
Yeah. My point is, those of us who have been fired can never – there are no words – right? Despite the fact that it's great, the great thing about being human is we can, in fact, learn from others' experiences. That's a very rare skill in the universe. We also have an annoying habit of not doing it terribly well. And it's impossible to communicate the experience of being fired and then realize 15 minutes later, this isn't that bad and I'm going to be fine. I'm not my job after all. But I mean, I wouldn't be doing this, I don't think, if I hadn't gotten fired. But look, we don't want anyone to aim for a bad review. And frankly, if you're surprised by a bad review, then your boss shares part of that responsibility. But whether your boss has shared it with you in advance or whether she hasn't is really irrelevant. We want to give guidance to everybody on what you do when you get a bad review. And it's not hard. And look, even if you've never had a bad review and you don't intend to, we recommend you keep listening. There's another way to use the guidance at the end of the cast, but I would argue nobody intends to do it, right? And like so many folks who write us emails and said, you know, I listened to that cast, I really like it, never thought I'd use it, and then suddenly I needed it. And it, look, if you're, you know, the chances are good in the course of your career, you're going to work for a bad boss who's not going to give you a bit of guidance, anything at all, and you're going to be left having to listen to a bad review when, in fact, there should have been 1,000 opportunities for you to get feedback, and you didn't because your boss didn't give it.
Right.
And then suddenly you actually delivered what you said you would do, but your boss says, nope, sorry, I changed that. I'm sorry you didn't realize it. I was trying to be as clear as possible, but you didn't get it, and that's too bad. The fact is you're getting a bad review, period.
Yeah, and I'd suggest that even at just one level of abstraction higher, that the things we're going to talk about today, it'd be a useful approach to take when getting, you know, any kind of bad or significant feedback, right? It may not be a bad review. It might be just a plain old butt chewing. And I think these steps would still apply. It'd still be the professional way to respond to even some significant feedback that's less than professional.
Yeah. So four steps. First of all, stay calm. It's hard to do, but it's worth staying calm. Number two, the key is to respond immediately, but only do so minimally. Don't think that you're going to come up with a great solution in 30 seconds. You're not. Okay. Don't think that after a 5-minute walking yourself back from the cliff that you're suddenly going to have an insight after your brain's been scrambled by, oh my gosh, I'm having a bad review. You're not going to. So we recommend you respond immediately, but only minimally. And then, within a few days, step three, you respond with a plan. And then, of course, step four, hopefully we don't even have to say it, stick with your plan. And this is how professionals do it. This, yeah, to your point, Mike, you could apply this to almost anything, right?
Yeah.
Stay calm and say something, but only a little bit, and then gather your forces and come back totally professional.
Yeah, and I love your first point, by the way, stay calm, because This is a problem that happens, right? You get a piece, you get a bad review, and then you get upset, right? And then you get angry or you get emotional, and that kind of that criticism you get, then the rush of adrenaline that's caused by our fight or flight system gives us a stream of emotions that's really can be kind of hard to handle. And then we feel angry and argumentative or upset and tearful. And then that becomes the problem, because not only are we upset about the bad review, now we're embarrassed about the fact that we were upset.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just not a terribly useful way to start the conversation.
Yeah, I've talked about this many, many times, that it's true for interviews, which is something that's done rarely, but it's important to us, right? Both reviews and interviews follow the Horseman Christmas rule, right? If it's important to you and you do it rarely, you're not going to be very good at it. And if you make a mistake in an interview, the problem is not the mistake. The problem is you're beating yourself up so bad and you're replaying the mistake and what could I have done better and differently. You forget the next question that's asked, or you're not listening well, and you mess up the next answer. And now you have two answers, and then the recruiter begins to get concerned and they elevate the difficulty of the interview, and then you're toast. Same thing here, right? If you don't handle well in the first couple of minutes and the manager backs off, they're forgetting about giving you a review, but now they're gathering data about can't handle professional critique, can't handle professional input. When in fact, if someone had seen a video, they would have said, well, your boss handled it poorly and was callous and rude and so on. Unfortunately, your boss is going to write the history of the meeting with his boss or with HR. You're not going to get to do that.
Yeah, history is written by the victors, right?
In this case, your boss is the people with power, right? Yeah. So look, despite the intensity of the feelings you're feeling at that moment, you can control them, right? We all need to practice the ability to address that feeling, that adrenaline rush. The emotions you're feeling are totally real, but just because emotion and motion, those two words are closely related, because no human being acts without feeling. Feelings are what cause us to act, even those of you hardcore purist engineers and accountants and IT people that think the world is entirely rational. It's your emotions that cause you to do things. But that doesn't mean emotions always cause you to do whatever comes first to your head. You don't have to act. But look, even if you haven't been practicing on monitoring your own self-emotional state, which is good, by the way, it has saved me many, many times in professional situations. Mike Swenson, our good friend Mike Swenson, who's going to be helping us out even more in 2011, we were talking about Covey's comment about having a gap between stimulus and response. And Swenson said, man, I've known you for a long time. You have built the Grand Canyon between stimulus and response. I do it a lot. And when you are a consultant, when you have your own firm, you have to learn how to do that. But look, if you do feel angry, just having the feeling being angry doesn't mean you need to take the next step to shout or attack or argue or pound the table, however you might see that actually happening. Just because you feel upset, if you feel attacked, or if you feel that because you're the sole breadwinner and your family is now at risk, you don't need to cry. You can learn how to separate the actual behavioral response from that emotional feeling of attack or victimhood or whatever. Keep your emotions in check as much as you possibly can. Now, look, we're not unsympathetic, right? I've certainly felt those emotions. I know Wendy has. I know you have, right? And we've had moments where we haven't controlled them as well as we'd like. I can think of times in front of hundreds of people where I didn't do as well as I could have. But there are far too many of us, and I would skew this younger or less experienced professionals, generally speaking, but many folks use language which suggests that, or actually says out loud directly, that they believe that emotions can't be controlled. You know, the classic example is the umbrella story, right? Somebody poked with an umbrella, and I got mad, and then my buddy said, no, he poked with an umbrella, you got mad all by yourself, right? It is possible, folks, in the same way that it's possible to control any part of your body, to control your facial expressions, your body language, the words you say, how you say them, the outward signs of your state of being. You can control those no matter how intense your emotional state. And you might be chuckling at this. Those of you who are more experienced, you might be chuckling at this. But even if you believe that those emotional states and the behaviors that quote, inevitably, unquote, follow from them, even if you believe they don't have to, if in fact you say, I'm somebody who feels something strongly and I wear my heart on my sleeve, and so therefore, you know, you just can't count on me to hold it in, our response is, that's a lack of professional maturity.
Yeah.
Okay? It's not you're different because you feel things emotionally. I'll give you a good example. I was working with a creative firm, and this person says, well, most of us creatives tend to be fairly emotional. Emotions really help us be creative. I said, well, that's great. And they said, so sometimes when our boss gets on us, we feel it's okay to be angry. And I said, that's great too. He says, really? I'm surprised. You know, Mark, you're telling us how to handle this stuff and the stresses that we're going through because our firm is struggling. And yet you say it's okay to be angry. I said, yeah, it's absolutely okay to be angry. And he says, well, good. Then I can yell at my boss. I said, oh, let's not confuse being angry with expressing anger at your boss, right? It's the behavior that's the problem. We're okay with you being angry. We're okay. We're frustrated at your boss for not giving you more advance notice. We're okay with you being angry. We're okay with you being hurt. I've been angry. I've been hurt, you know, day to day, week to week, month to month. We all have the normal range of human emotions, provided we're an adult and reasonably competent. It is the expression, which is the problem. And that's where we want you to build the gap between feeling the things you feel and expressing what you feel. And if your emotion is deep or strong and it's not designed to help the other person, then arguably professional maturity suggests you not express it. Now, that may be difficult, but
yeah. Well, what about those folks who have difficulty doing that, right? I mean, it's easy to understand intellectually, but when you're in the heat of the moment, it's tough. So you're sitting in front of your boss, you got a bad review, you're feeling emotional, either angry or sad and getting ready to cry. What do you just get up and walk out of the room?
You know, it's funny. I wouldn't completely rule that out. I'll tell you what I would say. It's perfectly acceptable to ask for a break if you feel you need one. If your manager can leave the room and give you a few minutes, that's usually better than you leaving and walking through the office, right? But you could also say, hey, listen, can you give me 5 minutes? I'm really stunned by this. Can I step away for 5 minutes? I will be back. Now, look, if you ask for 5 minutes, be back in 5 minutes.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. But even better, if your boss leaves for a couple of minutes, there's the danger that you might be asked questions as you walk through the offices. You might be seen to be upset. You might be asked questions later. But if you have to, walk quickly and purposefully away from the conference room, wherever it is. Don't make eye contact. Find somewhere private and take some time to breathe deeply. And look, if you're going to cry, it's okay to cry. I remember reading a book years ago by a guy who was a poet. I want to say his name is James Autry, and he was a very senior executive in a publishing house. And he said, look, if you're giving tough review and you don't have tissue there, because some people are going to cry, then you're just not of the human race in terms of awareness that kind of stuff happens. It doesn't make you a bad person if you feel like crying. Okay. Now, it may not be the most professional response to break down and sob in front of your boss. We're telling you there's a difference between the behavior of breaking down and sobbing in front of your boss and the feeling of that deep emotion of fear and pain and suffering and embarrassment and so on. And if you feel that you are not yet professionally mature enough to stop doing that, ask to be excused, even if your voice quivers when you do it. Walk quickly to the men's room or the ladies' room or somewhere else outside. Walk far enough where you can take a few deep breaths and get yourself under control. And if you do cry, it's okay. People cry for all kinds of reasons. I cry during sad movies and happy movies and funny movies, and it's okay. Don't think while you're walking away about what's been said. You're not going to have any good thoughts about it. It'll probably just fuel your anger. It'll make you more upset. You know, if we were to go a little bit Zen, a little yoga on you, try breathing in and out and concentrate on the feeling of the breath in your chest and lungs. Try to breathe into your stomach rather than high in your chest. And, you know, the way you do that, for those of us who have been to yoga, is put your hand on your stomach and try to feel it move in and out. It sounds really corny, but this is what really effective people do who are learning how to control their emotions when, in fact, they're faced with a deeply emotional situation. And I guess this is a long-winded way of saying, which I know I'm good at long-winded, but this is a long-winded way of saying those emotions you're feeling are okay, and being told something significant that's significantly negative on an end of your review is a time for emotions. It's okay.
Good. Okay, so let's say you've collected yourself, or you either left and collected yourself, or you didn't leave at all because you're able to collect yourself there. Your second point, which kind of surprised me a little bit, is respond minimally immediately. That surprised me because I think a lot of folks believe that, you know, the professional thing to do would be to be able to respond immediately. Okay, boss, you said this. Here are the five things I'm going to do, or here's what I think about that, or here's what I plan on doing next.
Sure.
You don't believe that?
Yeah. One of the interesting things I've learned about professional maturity and emotional maturity, dealing with a lot of executives who have a lot of different, let's call them opportunities for improvement relative to the expression of emotions and feeling emotions in the workplace. I've discovered that the more one builds the Grand Canyon, the more one builds the gap, the easier it is to then shorten the gap, to separate the hurt from the behavior, and then say, okay, what behavior, and be able to respond fairly quickly. But the fact is, adrenaline, folks, adrenaline, and that fight or flight, that sense of I'm at risk here, and a bad review puts you at risk, and so therefore your body releases adrenaline. Adrenaline messes with your ability to think clearly and calmly, rationally, if you will, particularly as it relates to planning. You become a very short-term planner. You literally think about one step in front of the other. You can't make good decisions when you're in that state about what to do next. There's just ample evidence that people don't do as well. People who have learned how to work through their emotions do better, but they still don't do as well in the moment, even if they think they've gotten over it, than they would if they waited a couple of hours. So don't try. And if you're worried at all about your emotional state, absolutely don't try. Look, even if your corporate review process doesn't officially allow a cooling off period, believe us, folks, there is a contingency built into the system for you to walk away from your review, ask to be excused, and to do that later, or to think about what the plan is going to be or what have you. You don't have to make your comments right now, and you don't have to sign off the review in that moment. Now, your boss may say that because your boss didn't pay attention to his or her training, and they just said, oh, you've got to sign it. And somebody said, look, the three things you have to do, you have to deliver it, they have to hear it, and they have to sign it. And your boss may say, hey, I really, really want you to sign this. Now, when you tell them, I'm not going to sign it, they may think you're saying, I disagree, and I'm going to sue, or I'm going to go to HR or whatever. That will cause them to bring out role power, right? They think they're being reasonable with you, and then you're behaving inappropriately by not doing what they need done. And so they bring out role power and says, you have to sign it, you have to sign it. And you have to look at them and say, I will sign it. I'm not going to sign it right this minute. My lack of signing has nothing to do with disagreement. It's I'm not ready to make that decision yet. Okay. I mean, folks, even if you're at the last day because your manager did a crummy job, and there have been people, Mike and I have been training recently on giving reviews, and we said, please, please, please deliver your reviews early in the open window, right? Because you never know what's going to happen at the end. But even if you're the last day that the system is, quote, open, unquote, HR has to be able to make changes later in case of illnesses, other issues, managers that had, you know, were out of the office, whatever. Yeah, okay. Look, you're going to be discouraged from taking too long, but you don't have to respond right now. So how do you respond minimally? You thank the manager. You thank your boss for the review.
Yeah, oh, sure. Right. What if I disagree with every single word that is put on the piece of paper?
You still say thank you. The boss is delivering. Think about it. The boss is doing what they're supposed to do. You're receiving the review. Everyone in the world would say, I mean, even reviews that are done terribly, if they had a choice between no review at all, and then therefore no insight to what kind of performance improvement, performance bonus they would get, or whether or not their raise is going to go up, people would say, look, I don't even care if it's bad, but I do deserve at least something that tells me how I'm doing, that the company acknowledges I'm there. So yeah, even if you disagree with every single letter of the review, you still say thank you because you're thanking your manager for being a part of the process. And thanking people is not saying, I agree, okay? If someone does something when you're checking in a hotel and you think they did it wrong, you can still be thankful that they checked you into the hotel, even if in fact they made it really, really difficult. You're thankful that you got checked in, even if you would have done it completely differently. You're thankful that you know now rather than finding out later after you got fired, right? That happens all the time. People say, I don't want to give this guy a review. I'm going to delay it for 2 months. I have that right. The manager delays it. And then the manager fires him and says, I don't need to give you a review. And you don't want a review from me if I just fired you, right? Because that won't go very right, well. Yeah. Heaven forbid we share that with somebody. So you ask for a day or two after you've said thank you. You ask for a day or two to consider what they've said before you respond. If you do this calmly, if you ask calmly and professionally, the majority of managers will agree to your request. They're not enjoying the conversation either, and allowing you to calm yourself or just putting it off will seem, for some of them, for many of them, a good plan.
Okay, for many of them, not all of them though. What if one of what if your manager disagrees and says you have to sign off on the review like right now?
Yeah. So two things. One, I don't have any I recommend people say, "Are you sure?" And what does my signature mean? But if the manager gets really, really forceful, and you feel the only way to avoid signing is to get forceful back, whatever you do, don't get forceful back. Okay, stay calm, make minimal comments, and sign off on your review. And frankly, I have to tell you, folks, most companies, the signing off is not an agreement. It used to mean that. It used to mean you agree. It now means this was delivered to me in some fashion.
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah, exactly. I was there. And look, in our experience, reviews are rarely the organizational development tool they should be. If your manager has made up his mind and he isn't willing to be considerate, there's no point in arguing about the signature. Not signing off on it isn't going to change your bonus or your pay increase. And that's the focus of most systems, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah. I think not signing it is very similar to getting emotional, angry, crying, or whatever. It's not viewed as terribly professional, and it's generally thought of as being just kind of putting your finger in the eye of your manager, I think.
Yeah, what I would say though is, yes, I think that could be true on the side of the manager, but if somebody says, "I don't want to sign it," as long as they have a good attitude that they're going to come back and sign it, or get out, you know.
Yeah,
if you think you're gaining some sort of tactical advantage legally, operationally, whatever, by not signing it, that's not our intent here at all. If you don't want to sign it and your boss doesn't insist, then don't sign it. If your boss insists, he or she is probably wrong for the insistence, and you still can sign it.
All right, now we get to the good part. Here's where I think the power is the development of a plan and then coming back with that plan within a few days, right?
Yeah, during that time you've gotten to develop a response, you create your plan and you document the plan. In other words, the plan is in writing. That's all documenting your plan means. When you go back to your manager, tell her about the plan.
Right. Again, even if you disagree with every single word that was put on that review,
yeah,
your manager believes it to be true. Your job here is to go back, is to address her concerns, whether you believe them or not, and come up with a plan that she's going to buy into.
Yep. Frankly, though, when you've had time to breathe and time to think about it, you're probably going to discover that some of the concerns from her perspective might be valid. As best you can, try to think about them objectively. Okay, look, you don't intentionally ignore and annoy customers, but is that the outcome that might be perceived when you call their questions minor quibbles to their faces, right? Yeah, it's reasonable to draw that conclusion. You don't intentionally send in sloppy work, but is that the viewed effect when you're busy and you don't double check it and in fact there are errors? You might not intentionally be unsupportive of your boss's ideas, but isn't it reasonable for her to feel that way when you ask lots of detailed questions, when everybody else is like rolling their eyes and saying, "Enough already, this is a fairly simple thing"? So the question really is, okay, how do you address the concerns? Obviously, it depends on what they are, but we'd suggest taking each concern in turn. And by the way, we should have said it. If you're going to sign it, or even if you don't, ask for a copy of it so you can develop a response. And by the way, if you're smart, you won't call it a response. You'll call it a plan to address the review, right? If you ask for a written copy, for a copy of your review, and then say, "I need to prepare a response to this," managers assume that one of the possible responses is a defense of why the boss is wrong. And I've actually had a manager tell me once, I didn't want to give her the actual review because, first of all, I had to keep the copy that had been signed to prove that it had been signed. But I was afraid that she was going to use it to defend herself. I thought, no, that's dumb, dude. I totally told him it was dumb, but it doesn't matter. So make sure you tell them, I'm going to come up with a plan, not a response, but a plan. So come up with a solution for everything that's mentioned in the review. Here are some examples. You could literally go down using the examples we just mentioned. Issue, let's say the review says customers are annoyed by you. You call their questions minor quibbles. And then right next to that, you put down solution. I will work out some different ways of addressing customers' questions. I will go to communications training to understand communication types. I will stop talking when I notice customers are starting to get annoyed and let my coworker John take over. For the part about your work is sloppy and contains errors, I will double check my work. I will ask a colleague to check my work. When my workload is high and I feel unable to check, I will talk to my boss. When the boss says you're unsupportive of the boss's ideas, I will work out a different way of addressing my boss's ideas. I will not ask questions repeatedly. I will remember to tell her it's a great idea. And I'll listen to the Manager Tools podcast of the downfall of high C's. Okay. Sorry, guys. Where were we? We're just somewhere and we were brainstorming possible ideas. And I said, please, somebody say podcast out loud because we have a podcast. As I've often said lately, we have a podcast about that. But let's talk about some more serious ones. Issue, you lost the Anderson account. Solution, I lost the Anderson account because I failed to communicate product changes in time and I damaged relationship with them when I failed to renegotiate pricing based on the changes. I will create an account plan with actions and deadlines for all my clients, keep them up to date, and not allow this to happen again. By the way, folks, if that sounds good, but it sounds like a lot of work, don't come up with a plan that you think you can do, but in fact will not address the concerns. The plan has to be something that you believe a reasonable person would say, wow, if they did that, that would overcome the concerns. If somebody says you're not innovative enough, I'll brainstorm once per month. I'll come up with a product improvement each time. Okay. Or you don't set a good example to the junior staff. And the plan might be, I'll be on time. I'll set aside time on my calendar to prepare for meetings. I will drink coffee at my desk instead of in the coffee bar across the road. I will not lose my temper in the office. Okay. So whether the plan is a series of responses to behavioral issues, or it's a timeline for getting a project back on track, or a project plan to get account plans in place for an account-based job, that'll depend on the issue and how you intend to address it. The important thing is you do not go back to your boss empty-handed. You go back with a plan, not a response, but a plan. Okay. You go back with that plan and you're able to say, look, I heard what you said. I'm sorry you're disappointed with my performance. By the way, that's just a statement of regret, right? You regret that your boss is disappointed. And the question really here is not, are you agreeing with your boss? The question is, what behaviors can you engage in to delay significant negative repercussions to you, to include, frankly, termination, right? And then you go on to tell the boss, hey, I can promise I'll do better, but I know that promises can be empty. I worked out a plan to help me do better in the future. Can we sit down and talk about it? I don't know. I don't think there are that many bosses who assume there's a chance they could keep somebody who would respond to the point, I've come up with a plan to address your concerns. Can we talk about it? I can't imagine they respond by, no, I don't want to talk to you.
Oh,
if they say, no, I don't want to talk to you, I think it's a pretty good sign you're on your last legs at the company.
Yeah, yeah. You better start looking for another place. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I can tell you, if after giving a poor review and nobody gets all the comments that we just described, right? There,
yeah, yeah.
There might be one or two of those. But if I gave a poor review to somebody and they came back with a plan like this, I might not be happy with their performance, but I'd be impressed about their willingness to improve it. And man, that's a great way to start after a poor review.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I actually will tell you this. Even if you're going to lose your job, or if you think you're going to lose your job, let me suggest something, folks. You don't want to make that decision right now. And so you need to engage in a series of behaviors that give you a few more weeks. Even if you know you're going to leave, you still want to do what we're recommending. Don't let someone else determine when you have to make career decisions. You take that decision back by saying, I'm going to come up with a plan. I'm going to dot my I's and cross my T's for the next 6 weeks while I'm actively looking, while I go home every day at 5:30 and I spend a couple hours every night working on my career plan, my transition plan, which by the way, will be helped enormously if your network is current and your resume is current, but those are different podcasts. And I just think too many people miss that. They miss the idea, well, look, I know I'm leaving in 2 months. Screw that. I'm not going to come up with a plan. No, you want a plan. If it buys you an extra month, first of all, you may need that month and that'd be a month of income. Or more importantly, even if you don't need that, you will have done this and you will have kept control of your timeline to you.
Yeah. Is there a requirement that I share all parts of my plan with my boss?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I suppose you might decide to demonstrate that you could be relied upon and, you know, you decide privately that you're going to accept every assignment he gives you without complaint. It might be a personal goal and you might not share that. The point is, let me go to the other extreme there, though. That is not my answer to Mike's question is not designed to suggest you really don't need a plan as long as you do everything you have in your head. You still need a written plan, okay? It needs to cover the majority, if not everything that was addressed. There may be additional things you're going to do that you don't share. That's totally fine.
Yeah, and I guess the disadvantage of not having a plan is you may think that, you know, accepting every assignment without complaint addresses her concern. But if in fact you did that and it didn't address her concern, you won't have known that ahead of time, right?
Exactly.
So the idea about, you know, if I share the plan, if I say, well, if I do these things, that will address this issue. And if she says, well, no, you need to do these things as well, then at least you can adjust your plan. But keeping it private is could be dangerous.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And then, of course, your point four is surprise, surprise. And you just got to stick to your plan, right? I mean, if you promise all these things, guarantee results, and then you don't do it, that's not good.
Yeah. If you don't do it, you're guaranteed you'll almost certainly not get to next year's review, right? The plan says to your boss, I'm stepping up. If you don't step up, then you're not staying where you are. You're sliding backwards. Since you already had one bad review, the next one is going to be worse, or you're going to be fired. Now, look, we don't want to scare you, but that said, this isn't a panacea. It's not something you show your boss and then prove you figured it out and then forget about it, right? You have to actually do this hard work. Now, if you're not up for this hard work, my guess is probably some of the feedback your boss gave you is reasonable, and maybe you don't belong where you are. But if you're willing to say you're going to do it, you know, then you ought to do it. And look, this just isn't about your boss and a bad review. It's about your self-esteem. You don't want to leave with that cloud hanging over your head, right? If I had a chance to do it over again, I'd do these couple of things better. It's about you knowing you're doing a good job and essentially earning the money you're paid rather than feeling like I'm not meeting my criteria. It's about you committing to something and following through. In your boss one-on-ones, if in fact your boss has one-on-ones with you, update your boss on the plan and how you're progressing against it. Keep it in his or her mind so it stays in your mind. And yeah, change is hard, and accountability, even if you have to force it on yourself, is going to help that change. By the mile, it's a trial. By the yard, it's hard. And by the inch, it's a cinch. If you say, I'm going to do all these things, and you don't check on yourself for 3 months, and then your boss asks you and you're not ready to answer that, that's terrible. On the other hand, if you're reporting, self-reporting every week, much more likely you're going to get there in a way that'll be helpful to your boss and to you.
Absolutely.
That's kind of the high level. We promised that at the end of the cast, we had a little story for you. If you'd never gotten a bad review and you never intend to, there is another way to use this cast. The story is Wendy met me and Mike by email when the podcasts were first quite new. We put out a cast called the Manager Tools Development Challenge in January of 2006. And in it, we set some challenges for our members to have a better 2006. And she totally accepted the challenge. And she emailed us and says, I think I'm going to be fired. By the end of the year, though, I intend to be the best performing member of the team. And Wendy was an early adopter and somebody that I had been very impressed with online with the comments she was making, never having met her before, thanks to the power of the internet and the forums. And I said, hey, look, I sent her a private message and I offered her my phone number and said, maybe I can help. You know, somebody who's willing to say out loud, I think I'm going to be fired, but, you know, maybe I can help. And she and I had a series of phone calls, which basically followed this guidance that we're sharing with you now. Now, look, she got fired anyway. And lucky for her, just like for me, for those of you who haven't been fired, we can both tell you, we may not ask you to relive it, but it can absolutely make you better and stronger because it wasn't fatal. And look where she ended up. You know, she will tell you at a conference, she's the girl with the best job in the world. I try to avoid saying, because I know it's not true, she's the person with the best boss in the world, because I know that's not true, because I know Lynn Whiteman. But she's used this plan every time she's felt stale or she wanted to change things up. You don't need somebody else to tell you about your performance, folks. You can assess your performance for yourself and find out what you did and didn't do that met or didn't meet your standard. You can assess your performance. You can set plans for yourself to improve without anybody else's input. You can have a renaissance all by yourself. Or you can ask your boss for feedback at any time and use his or her feedback as the basis for a plan just like this, a plan for you to get better. But no matter what, always have a plan. Because if you don't, really, in today's world, if you don't have it, you're not just standing still, you're slipping backwards. And that's not the professional way to be.
Agreed.
Yeah. So four things. Stay calm, right? Build a Grand Canyon. Practice if you have to, right? Respond immediately, but only minimally. Okay. You know, there is a good idea. You know, it's good to have a response, but it doesn't need to be very, very much. Get out of there if you have to, and then respond with a more detailed plan within a few days. And then, folks, stick to that plan. It'll work.
Awesome. All right, my friend. Thanks.
Thanks, partner.
All right. We'll see you. Thanks, everyone. That's it. And we'll see you again next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.